Project Ignite Sessions, where innovation, technology, and entrepreneurship meet the brightest minds, leaders, and innovators in Colorado, our university ecosystem, and abroad. Hello, all you starters. Welcome to Project Ignite Sessions, where innovation, technology, and entrepreneurship meet. We're really excited about our guest today. We have Nate Egan, who's our Student Innovation Fellow from the University of Denver, who helps lead all things Project Ignite, and Luke Beatty, one of our awesome entrepreneurs here in Colorado, who really excited to share your story from Techstars to AOL to building a multi-million dollar company right in our backyard. Luke's got quite the story. So just to give you the arc of all the things we're doing within Project Ignite Sessions, this is really to inspire the entrepreneurs out there in our entrepreneurial alumni and broader startup community here in Colorado, and give you the tips and tricks to be the best that you can be and never stop starting up. So with that, Luke, tell us a little about yourself. You're a Colorado native, and you know, give us a little background, like who in the heck is Luke Beatty?
All right. So I grew up here, not far from the DU campus here, and went to, you know, grade school and high school here, went to college and grad school on the East Coast. And then after a sort of short career as a school administrator and lacrosse coach and college lacrosse coach, I really decided that I wanted to get involved in digital media. And at that point in time, digital media was synonymous with search. Search was, you know, in the mid to late 90s, search was exploding, and the web was almost exclusively navigated by search. And I wanted to get a job in search no matter what. And I was living in Cambridge, Massachusetts at the time. And I had zero experience. So I applied to every sort of search related startup in the country, and coincidentally got a job as a unpaid summer intern at a startup in town here called Wand, which is a taxonomy provider for lots of search engines, online directories, and that sort of thing. And spent the summer there, and then really quickly found myself in Silicon Valley, going back and forth from Denver as sort of being the sort of business development partnership kind of product person connected to that business just in a matter of months. And it ended up taking a full-time job there. And then in my experience there over a couple of years, really, because I'd spend all day looking at search queries and looking at all of the user behavior at most of the major consumer search engines, whether it was Google or Yahoo or AltaVista or other ones that I could use their name and it would sound pretty embarrassing. I could see where there were gaps on the internet because you could see where there wasn't content in huge categories. So I decided to start a company that would fulfill that sort of along the lines the way eBay sort of filled in the gaps of commerce on the web, right? Things that that you couldn't necessarily buy at a big e-commerce store, but that there was access to on the internet. So I built a company called Associated Content, which was a big crowdsourced publishing platform, which allowed media companies to source content from freelancers, semi-professional people, whatever, any type of person in the world. So the example there would be, you know, at that point in time, somebody like ESPN was not covering high school sports because they didn't have the editorial staff to do that. But yet there was demand for, you know, scores and editorial around, say, Texas high school football. So we would find those people to cover those games, process that content, pay those people, edit that content, and send it to ESPN for them. So we provided that service to lots of bigger media companies. One of our main customers was Yahoo. We then sold that company to Yahoo in 2010. I worked at Yahoo for a few years, running a lot of the consumer-facing brands at Yahoo, kind of a traditional vintage portal experience. And then had a took time off from working at big media companies and ran Techstars in Boulder for a while, which was an awesome sort of change of pace and more of a local job, which was fun. And got to spend my summer in Boulder, and that was great. And then decided to go about 4 years ago, go to AOL. My roommate from college and best friend and college lacrosse teammate is Tim Armstrong, who's the CEO of AOL. And the idea was to go in there and figure out what we were going to do with that company, because it needed to be find a new home. We were either going to take that company private, sell it, do something else. It had just been spun off from Time Warner, and there were lots of problems there. And so that was an awesome challenge. And I ran the, I was the president of the media brands there, which meant running the media side of the house, which included, you know, brands like TechCrunch and Engadget and, you know, Huffington Post, all the consumer media side of that. And we ended up selling AOL to Verizon last year. And then I spent the last year working on the acquisition of Yahoo. So it's kind of a lot of full circle stuff. And I've been fortunate enough to be able to do that out of Denver. And I've always had a big, a decent sized office and crew of people, in Cherry Creek or downtown. But also a lot of travel.
So Luke, with that background, it sounds like your career went to the moon and back. I mean, you know, from Colorado to university, to starting a company, selling it to Yahoo, going in-house at Yahoo, running Techstars, being the president of AOL, overseeing TechCrunch. I mean, that is an absolute meteor. How'd you get started? Like, when you thought about associated content, like, what was that catalyst to even begin that trail?
Yeah, that's, I was talking about that the other day. I was, this sort of, you know, now it's like, there are these people in the world who are like, have this career objective of being an entrepreneur and being a startup person and being a founder. And they sort of run around and try to find something that they can start. I was not that person. Like I ended up finding this opportunity, when I was working, in the search world. And kind of just started the company because I had a business plan that I knew for a fact that would work. And I spent a lot of my time looking around to see who was doing it, because somebody must have been doing that, you know, because it was pretty, pretty obvious. And I had only been working in the internet for like 3 years at the time. So I, you know, the idea that I would be the first person to have thought of that seemed highly unlikely to me. And I didn't know anybody. And I looked around and I met with, you know, I went around to the angel investors who were the first money in Google and Facebook and said, I have this idea. And my first question was, who else is doing this? And their answer was not, well, I've not seen anybody with this kind of business plan. So I sort of just stumbled into it. And I also took a very, inexperienced approach. You know, I wasn't sort of like, and then I'll go to Techstars and then I'll do this and then I'll get money from, you know, these well-known people. I kind of just, I think my success was just based on like ignorance and mostly just like going, like I went, when it was time to start the company, I didn't know anybody really. And the company that I worked for was not a super networked Silicon Valley kind of company. It was a startup in Colorado. And back then there was not a lot of connectivity between those two. And when I realized that I knew I was going to start this business up, I went and, you know, I went on the internet and found out who were the people that invested in Google, Facebook, and all that. And then I just made appointments with those people, you know, which I think back then was probably a lot easier than it is today. But I wasn't like haranguing a bunch of my deep contacts and going around and taking a templated approach to it. I sort of was sort of like, well, if I do this, I'm definitely going to get the best people involved. And if the best people don't want to be involved, then I'm not doing it because I don't really know enough. You know, I was a school teacher like 3 years before that. So I didn't have the, that. And there wasn't, you know, in the early 2000s and mid 2000s, there was not this sort of like right now, if you said, I'm going to go start a company, there is a lot of different, very well-authored runways of how to do that, right? You know, places to go to school, incubators, accelerators, Project Excite. There's all kinds of ways to ramp yourself into that kind of
for sure
program. But back then there was not that, you know, and you also had, there are a lot of people working in digital media and the internet that didn't have any experience. So just to, you know, there were a lot of, it wasn't like, you know, that now I look at resumes and these kids have had internships at awesome digital media companies and startups since they were sophomores in high school. You know, it was not a big deal to have a resume that had 0.0 experience at that point in time as a 20, whatever, 5-year-old or 27-year-old. Like, but now that's, now you have to start a lot earlier.
Looking back, now that you have all of this experience, what would you have done differently? You talked about all these different paths that are laid out for us now.
Yeah.
What path would you have taken?
Well, I probably would have taken the path of where I knew the most people and where I could find people who I sort of liked working with. I've always taken the approach of it's not what you do, it's who you work with. You know, I think you can you can look at things like majors and curriculum and roadmaps and sort of different kinds of this program will take you to point A to point B. And I think that's important kind of initially. But I always say after being working on something, whether it's a project or a job or a new company or whatever, it's, you know, after about the second or third month, it's sort of who you have to sit with all day and who you have to just sit and talk to and who you've got to have meetings with and who you can joke around with at lunchtime. And all of that is probably from a day-to-day experience is arguably maybe not as important, but certainly as impactful on your what your day looks like. So I'm always the kind of person who's inclined to sort of work with people who I think it would be fun and engaging and stimulating to work with. So, you know, I think you could, you know, especially now with all of the different sort of ways to go about being an entrepreneur and all the different sort of structured programs, some of them more structured than others that you could get involved with. You know, my inclination would be to work with the people who you like working with, who you seem to, you know, jive with, because the reality is that you're probably not going to end up doing what you came to do in 3 or 4 years anyway. And the thing that has the most likelihood of being persistent is the people. So, it's kind of who you work with, maybe. That would be how I would sort through that, you know. And I was funny, we were talking last night, another, you know, entrepreneur from Denver and I, a guy named Justin Anthony, who was, you know, either going to get a startup and work with Techstars or work with 500 startups or work with Y Combinator, which are obviously three sort of well-known, I don't know, accelerators, incubators, whatever. There's one under every seat cushion at this point. But they, you know, he ended up doing 500 startups just because he really sort of felt like he had a good relationship and liked being around Dave McClure and some of those other people there. But any one of those could have been awesome, you know, and same with Project Excite for, you know, undergrad and grad school students that are really in a program. There's probably a lot of those at different colleges and universities. And it would be sort of like, who do I like sitting with all day?
From a leadership perspective, being in high, I guess, in education, school teacher, principal, then going to found a company and then being the president of one of the largest media brands in the United States. What's been that core leadership philosophy that's allowed you to bridge that? The skills and being in all three of those seem from the outside dynastically different.
Yeah.
What's been that common thread that's allowed you to really craft your career and be successful in each of those chapters?
I think when you look at leadership sort of programs and leadership philosophies, I think there's a lot of people that try to come up with really unique answers to that question. I don't have a really unique answer to that question. I think that, you know, it's three things. It's you have to find really, really awesome people, and you have to be a people collector. And if you're not a good people collector, and some people are good people collector because everybody wants to be around them all day. Some people are good people collector because they know the exact combination of experiences that are necessary to get the right people. But you have to be a glow in the dark people collector. You have to be able to like identify people who you think will have huge growth potential and are going to, you know, do exactly what you want to do, because you will find out that, you know, you see a lot of books and hear a lot of people talking about this is how you get your workforce to work well for you. I don't believe in that at all in the startup world. Like, there is zero time to get somebody to work hard. There is zero time to get somebody to play well with other people. There is zero time. There's a lot of time to teach people how to do technical things. Like, you can teach somebody to be a programmer. You can do that. But the basic things, you know, like I'll say to people, like, we're going to hire this guy. He's kind of an introvert and doesn't really, we're kind of all a bunch of extroverts. I'm like, well, then you can't hire that person, because that's where you can't teach that person to be an extrovert. And I think maybe you can do those kinds of behavioral things in bigger companies. But if you're going to hire seven people to work on a project, you can't be in the business of, well, he's my really good friend from childhood. And, you know, he doesn't necessarily work that hard, but I really like him and he's really smart. If you're going to be in the business of working hard, then you can't hire that person. So I think a lot of that being able to identify glow in the dark people is also coming to the realization that you can't really change people in a startup. You know, you can teach people how to do jobs and tasks, but you can't teach people work ethic, how to get along with other people, blah, 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 blah. Like I feel like everybody who's having team problems is often going down that battle of trying to get their second in command or their new design team to work well with their, if your design team can't work well with your engineers, you're not probably going to be able to teach them how to do that in the amount of time that you have to do that. So that's number one. You know, I think work ethic matters. And I think especially in the startup world, I think there are a lot of recreational startup people, you know, that are interested in living a startup lifestyle. And I think that you really can out hustle people. I just believe in that fundamentally. I mean, you can see that in any type of thing in the world. You can watch the Olympics, and three or four people that win medals every year, it ends up being pretty obvious to everybody. It was just because they worked way harder than everybody else, you know? And I think no matter how dumb you are, how bad your idea is, the only thing that's bulletproof is like work ethic. And if you can work harder than everybody, something will probably come out of that. You know, there are a lot of companies, I feel like, too, if you have a company and you need to find a home for it, you'll always be acquired if you have the hardest working team, because anybody who's got a big company wants a bunch of hardworking people, even if their product isn't good. But like, that is a very hard thing to come by, is hardworking. So, you know, people collecting, hardworking, and then also you also have to be, you know, out and about. You know, I think you can't, you know, people ask a lot of like, well, I'm going to start a company in Colorado. I'm like, great, then hire people from outside of Colorado and raise money from outside of Colorado, right? Like you have to be out. You can't just be behind a desk and invisible. And I really believe in that, because it is the internet. And you could be producing the content and building the property and building the business in the Ukraine, but you need to be out on the road, you know, and you need to be meeting people, and you need to be, you know, you need to be well connected. And I think that in today's world, it's pretty easy to be well connected. So there's not a lot of excuses for that. And especially, you know, as it relates to Colorado and Project Excite, like, you can't be sort of metacognitive and just be thinking about yourself and in your group and constantly working exclusively with your little network. You have to be, you have to be out there talking to people, meeting people, knowing people, and being super, super dialed in and in the community that's outside of your community, you know?
So on the topic of being out and about, what advice do you have for students that may not have access to the resources or the ability to be spread so thin while they're in college?
Well, I had talking to a guy yesterday who's starting up a healthcare startup in town, and he asked kind of a similar question. And Eric has heard me say this before. People assume, I don't know why this is, but people assume that the people that they need to talk to won't talk to them, which is insane to me. I've never understood that, right? So it's sort of like, if you know, like, I need to be connected to that person, then go talk to that person. Reach out to that person. And maybe if you can't reach out to that person, who's the person that's closest to that person or works with that person? The chances of not being able to get somehow connected to that person are like, I think they're like less than 20%. And if you try to reach out to 20 people, you're going to get in touch with 7 or 8 of them. And there's kind of this sort of roll over and die idea that people have right out of the gate, which is, well, I'm just a sophomore in college. How would I ever know anybody at Facebook? Or how could I ever know anybody who works at MIT? It's like, because you found out who they were and found a way to reach out to them. The number of people, if you get in touch with them, that will not respond to you is very small. Now, they may not call you back in 5 minutes, and they may send you to their assistant, or they may say, I'm going to put you in touch with this kid in my grad school program who's working on what you're doing. But that's how the world works. And there's a lot of people that just assume that all of these people that they want to connect with, or companies that they want to connect or whatever, are sort of inaccessible. I answer every email that everybody ever sends me. And I know you do. And I don't know a lot of people that don't. And if they don't, they would respond and be like, listen, I am out of town and on the road for the next month and a half. Let's connect when I get back. Or in the meantime, you know, talk to Sally, you know, like, and she's my right-hand person, right? So I think that you actually just have to do it. And I don't think it's that complicated. And I don't think it requires a 75-page cover letter that 85 people have edited, you know? I think it's hard to do that. I would say what you ask them matters, you know? I mean, if you ask people to have coffee, I think they want to just go into the drawer and pull out the gun and blow their head off, because I don't know that everybody wants to have coffee. But if you have a one-sentence question, a yes or no question, or something that people can handle in an efficient way, they will respond to you. So I think that college kids, people are especially sympathetic to college kids, I feel like. Don't you?
I do, 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, because they're not trying to sell them something. You know, they're not like, hey, I'm Bobby.
There's a great opportunity to help. There's a great opportunity to mentor. There's a good opportunity to engage. Yeah. I totally agree.
Yeah.
So, Luke, you know, I heard that you're a lax player. Our lacrosse team is not so shabby.
Yeah.
And ranked to number 1 in the nation right now. And so... Yeah. When you think about this career of, as you've laid it out, being an awesome people collector, luck, and a bunch of hustle, when you were in the throes of working at AOL and doing, you know, a multi-billion-dollar merger with Verizon, you know, when you look back on that experience, what were some of the most fun and exhilarating moments in the midst of that? That you can talk about that, you know, really exemplify kind of all three of those things in action?
I would say I think it's the most sort of exhilarating elements around a deal like that that are most exhilarating usually are the, you know, it's very much a game, you know, and it's the results are also in a game like that are also very polar. You're either going to win or you're going to lose. This is either going to, we're either going to get this deal or we're not going to get this deal. And a lot of times when you're doing work things, as you know, a lot of things are sort of in between, right? And it's like, well, we went to try to collect a dozen of these things and we got six, you know? And it's like, okay, not terrible, not bad, right? There's a lot of C pluses, B minuses, you know, a lot of things that are kind of like, but when you're doing a deal like that, you're really playing a zero sum game, you know, where it's like, well, this is either going to work out or it's not going to work out. And there's no kind of like, well, it sort of worked out, like, because we're now all good friends with them or something, like, but the deal didn't go through. It's same thing with if you have a startup and you're trying to finance your company. Your company's probably either going to be financed or it's not. There are some C minus kind of ways around that. But you're either solving the problem or you're not. And in a deal like that, same with, you know, this Verizon AOL acquisition that's going on right now, which I suspect will close in the next few weeks. Those big deals, they are either happening or they're not, you know, and they're, you know, and sometimes you're the person who wants it to happen and sometimes you're the person who doesn't want it to happen. But it's a very, it's exhilarating like a lacrosse game in that someone's going to walk off that field with a win and somebody is going to walk off that field with a loss. And I like that, you know, I'm a competitive person and I like to win. I also know that by losing a lot, you also appreciate winning more. And that, you know, unlike my 5-year-old named Gus, who does not understand that you're going to lose half the times that you win and that he completely malfunctions at this point when he doesn't win something. There's a lot to that, you know, and I think your whole career is a constant stacking and restacking of wins and losses that you're constantly taking and not taking. And I think that's one of the cool things about doing this work. You know, you talk to a lot of people who work in sales. It's the same way. You know, it's like for them, it's very competitive. Like, do I hit my number? Right. Did I sell the number of widgets that I was supposed to sell? You know, and there's actually a yes or no answer to that question, you know? And I think there's a lot of careers and a lot of things out there that don't really have as much of that. I mean, you know, there are a lot of soft wins, you know, in certain things that people do. You know, I've got a friend who's a lawyer and, you know, he's not a litigator, so he doesn't take things to court that much. And he does a lot of, you know, drafting of contracts and all that. And there's not a lot of, you know, I want at work today kind of stuff. And I think that's a cool thing about being involved in deals like that. And that deal could be a several billion-dollar deal, or that could be a $100,000 deal. It's still going to have that kind of thing. So I think that's, you know, that's fun. I do think, to respond to the lacrosse question, you see an enormous amount of athletes involved in these deals, you know, and super competitive people, you know, and I think they're a different kind of person. And sometimes they're Marnie Walden, who runs the really consumer, you know, non-phone, non-device side at Verizon, who is an awesome person. She is like a psychopathic youth hockey person who's got kids that are like youth hockey people. And she is the most competitive person. And she sees the world like that, you know, and she's a former athlete. And she was sort of the person also on the Verizon side doing that deal. And at that point in time, she was on the other side of the table, you know? So you see, you know, and I think a lot of athletes, I think a lot of people who recruit students to work for their companies, they look for athletes a lot of the time. And they don't necessarily look for the best athlete on the team. You know, they look for the person who barely made the team, you know, who's, you know, because those people are generally pushing hard.
So Luke, luck, hustle, people collector, and being athletic in your career. Nate, you want to kind of take us home?
Yeah. When the losses are stacking up, how do you keep your head in the game? What's your advice to students there?
Yeah, like absolutely. That's the point at which you got to like go surround yourself with people that are winning. And maybe that means like quitting your job and going and doing something else that, you know, like I think losing can also be super viral. Like I think if you're losing a lot and it's hard to get out of that hole, I think that's a time when you need to, you know, as soon as you feel like, God, the losses are stacking up and whatever. And I'm not a, you know, pull the trigger and bail out guy, but you know, I think it's a lot of that is a social thing, you know, and I think you need to start surrounding yourself with people who do that. I think you see a lot of teams where, you know, the founder is still thinking, this is going to work. This is a great idea. I'm going to keep doing this. If you've got a team of people who have been there for 5 years and they're sort of like, I don't know if this is ever really going to work out, you know, and as soon as the cup starts tipping that way, you got to restaff and resurround yourself with people who feel like, you know, you can win. Because winners lose and losers definitely lose, you know? So I think you got to like, you know, when the losses stack up, I think you got to, you know, and I think a lot of people too often are sort of like, well, I'm going to make my product or the thing that I'm making and the thing that I'm building, you know, win on points and we're going to win. We're going to start winning because our product's going to be better. And I think that matters a lot, but I think it starts with the people for sure.
Luke, this has been awesome. Thank you so much for being on the University of Denver campus today.
Yeah.
Really engaging with Project Excite at the intersection of technology, innovation, and entrepreneurship here, not only on the campus, but also across the greater Front Range of Colorado. That's going to do it for this episode of Project Excite Sessions. If you'd like to learn more about what we're doing with Project Excite, please visit us at projectexcite.org. Nate, thank you for being such an awesome student innovation fellow. Great questions today.
Thanks, Nate.
Really appreciate our partner in this, the Cable Center, for hosting us. Really great to be here on this really special place on campus. And thank you for joining us. And remember, never stop starting up. Project Excite Sessions on the University of Denver campus is produced with our partner, the Cable Center. You can always visit upcoming episodes of Project Excite Sessions at projectexcite.org.